Welcome to the Nifty Podcast, presented by Partyfish Media, a showcase of the best emerging filmmakers under the age of 25 from all around the world. Film starts here at Nifty 2019 in Seattle, Washington. And hi, everybody. My name is Robert Spiewak. I'm part of the programming team for Nifty 2019. And it's wonderful to be sitting here with the director of a film that is in the festival this year, Virgin Sita, directed by Giselle Bonilla. Giselle, hello.
Hello.
Introduce yourself. Yeah. But we're excited to talk about the film. And let's start with, for those that maybe are listening to this before they've seen it, or just to give some context, why don't you give us like a little synopsis of the film, like a log line.
Okay.
About Virgin Sita.
Yeah. Broad stroke log line is, it's basically about a woman whose failed attempt at masturbating leads her to being accused of being suicidal. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of beings, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, it comes to, call it the climax. That is the end-ish, the last chunk of the movie. And there's also this, one of the striking things about the framing of all of this is the family relationship between the lead, which is played by you, mm-hmm. And the mother in the film. And there's like this confessional that opens it too. And so I'm curious the inspirations for tying all of that together on your part.
I wrote it as a project in film school, and I was mainly just concerned about the whole like miscommunication with, essentially it's more of like a statement about how Catholicism is really oppressive, especially in like yeah. Latin American households.
Absolutely.
It's like, you know, you're brought up in the States and you think like, I am whatever, a kid here, but your parents are like raising you like it's 1950 Mexico.
Yeah.
You don't talk about sex.
Yeah.
You talk about anything that's taboo. And if you have an urge, they just send you to church. And so it was just something that I grew up being really frustrated by, especially since a lot of my family, I come from a huge family. My yeah. dad's the youngest of 10. My mom's the oldest of 6. And they each have like 5 kids. And then those yeah. kids have a lot of kids.
Yep.
So I grew up with my second cousins. But it was really annoying because like we weren't allowed, or I was, my parents were pretty progressive, but a lot of my family members kind of kept boyfriends a secret and would like secretly date. And their parents had no idea. And they just kind of like, the second you have a quinceañera, you just basically have to go to church every day and just like, you know, pray the sex away.
Yeah.
And so it was just, it wasn't talked about. And like little by little, your cousins would start showing up pregnant at the barbecues. And it's like, mm-hmm. there's just no sex education. That was really yeah. frustrating for me growing up. So I wanted to do a film about that, but not make it really like dense and like kind of elicit it in a way that would be interesting to people my age and younger,
yeah.
And would find it funny and relatable. So that's kind of, I just did a very extreme version of like worst case scenario, what would happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The fall in the shower and the cut to the hospital room, I think is this. I was, yeah, you know, because there's some comedic elements to it. And then there's that hard left turn where I was like, oh, whoa, like it caught me off guard. I was like, okay, all right, yeah, let's take it this direction too. And I think the core of that is the relationship between the mother and the daughter. And so I'm curious if you started as a writer director or an actor, like what was the decision for you to be the lead in this?
Well, I used to be a child actor, and I kind of just got surprised. I'm Mexican. I don't know if I mentioned that. I probably did like 50 times. But I was like always, I would only book like really racist, stereotypical roles that were like, I didn't think about it as a kid because I just thought it was like super fun to, you know, be on
acting.
Set
yeah,
and just
yeah.
like get to do it. And
yeah.
But it was like, oh, as I got older, I was like, I'm kind of tired of drawing my eyebrows for this role or like putting on an accent or
yeah.
like playing illiterate. And I was on this like horrible sitcom that's no one's ever heard of. It was just like, it would show randomly like 5 a.m. on random networks. And like every episode I would just say like, I don't know how to read that or something so ridiculous. And
yeah.
it was like, I don't think I want to be an actor. And like I have a lot of great friends who are actors and they love it and they have fun, but they're, you know, not brown. So they get to like actually like play.
Yeah.
And I was really frustrated because I wanted to do comedy and I wasn't really given the opportunity to. So I decided to go to film school
mm-hmm.
and pursue comedy from an academic sense first and kind of just learn structurally like how does one go about being a director or like what do you what's interesting like to do. And then I just, I had a problem being creative in the sense of like writing fantasy or like things that didn't necessarily happen to me. Mm-hmm. And I found myself most creative when I would write from personal experiences and then just dramatize from there. And that's kind of where I would say kind of started my advocacy for sex education.
Yeah.
I didn't really know I was so passionate about it until I was like, oh, why do I only write about like really crazy sex scandals?
Yeah.
But that's kind of just how I ended up satirizing that, mm-hmm. just from personal experience.
Yeah.
I did hold casting sessions, but my DP is my best friend. Mm-hmm. So we had this like really fluid relationship where it was like, I felt like if I was going to direct something and act in it, I would have to do it with him.
Sure.
Where he can also essentially kind of co-direct in terms of like his strong suit was technical aspects and mine was more of like the like art, like acting.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was my background. And so it was really fun collaborating with him and learning from him, honestly, like, oh, like shot listing and like, what do I want to, because it was hard for me to visualize it. I just knew how I wanted to express it as an actor.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time where I was like, oh, he kind of opened the door to directing both technical and as an actor.
Yeah.
So it was really fun. I don't think I would want to act in my next thing just because I am more interested in directing now.
Yeah.
And kind of like, how much it's just a lot of responsibility as a director, and it's difficult to be in a scene with another actor and then have to step back and direct.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if like you, it's like a thing. If you like an actor directs another actor, you're just like, there's
something to like being able to focus, I think, that makes that really challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now that I've like gone, cause I shot this when I was 22 mm-hmm. and now I turn 25 tomorrow.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. I've been celebrating all weekend.
Yeah.
And so I just found myself way more interested in like visual composition and how that can enhance comedy, mm-hmm. And not just focusing on performance.
Yeah.
So that's been, yes. But that was the decision in that short film. Was like, I feel like because the story is so personal, I know how to tell it. I don't know. I guess it was an ego thing. I was like, I feel like it's easier for me to just do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Than to like, I don't know. I guess I've definitely grown stronger as a director throughout the years. Yeah. But at the time, I didn't feel strong enough to direct another person to share my story, per
yeah.
se.
Yeah, sure. And so what, because I know that there's a lot of directors that come from the technical side to decide they want to direct. There's a lot that are actors that, you know, it's kind of, it's a winding road that can get someone to directing. And I think that either starting from either place brings different strengths to that role. And so I'm curious what, having come from acting and, you know, wanting to learn more and just get into directing and learn a holistic view of directing, what do you think that you're able to bring to the table having been an actor that informs that?
I feel like because I know the vulnerability you feel as an actor mm-hmm. and, like, the pressure to be on, like, it takes, like, you know, sometimes, like, hours to set up a shot.
Yeah.
And the actor's just like supposed to be ready in an instant, the second, like you've had all this time to prepare to do this shot that obviously you've planned beforehand, but actors are like, okay, here you are. And like a lot of people, I mean, in my experience, especially like with commercials, they treat actors like props.
Yeah.
And they just like kind of, it's sometimes it's really disrespectful and they just, you know, literally just set them up like toys and the actors don't feel like playing and they're just played with.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's I feel like it's important for like actors to know that they can play and like make it a comfortable space and like give the, and not just be like overbearing as a director and say like directing at somebody instead of just like inviting somebody to play and like setting the scene for them to add their own creative input
mm-hmm.
and like not necessarily talk at them and tell them like exactly what you want but like paint this like just like give them a scenario and let them kind of just play and not be played with.
Yeah, and I think that the kind of the legacy of, you know, call it the way we've memed directing has has portrayed it as this very, like, the director has all the power and they're the ones making all the choices. Like, there's quotes from, like, Alfred Hitchcock that says, like, actors are cattle.
Yeah, yeah,
and you just herd them around.
Someone literally told me that in a commercial and they were, like, quoting Hitchcock when they were saying it to us. And I was like, oh, do you feel proud about that? I don't,
It's like, you, it should be something we're working against. Like, we should collaborate. Yeah. And I think that the art of filmmaking is coming back around to kind of push that out of the way.
Yeah.
And people want to work with each other now. And I think that's, it's starting to change. I don't know if it's, the lever hasn't flipped the other way yet, but.
Yeah. And like, I used to, I mean, I really kind of despised acting after a while because of my experience with it. And like, directing has made me appreciate it in a totally new way, especially because I mean, no one's giving me things to direct right now. So if I want to direct, I have to write it.
Yeah.
And that's honestly the only reason I hate writing. But like, if I want to direct right now at this stage, I'm like, I got to just do it myself.
To get over that hurdle,
Yeah, and like, because I am writing stories that I literally care about, like it's my story, it's way more fun to see how actors interpret it. And, you know, you're not just subjecting them to being little stereotypes and you're just like, oh, this is the worst, acting sucks. But, which it does at times, especially if you're not given the right opportunity and you feel like it's actually a job when it should always feel like playing.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right in saying that it can be hard, but you know, it's communication. It's a little bit of everything, and collaboration, and so to come back around to the film a little bit, since there's really only a few characters in this. There's the priest, and then there's you and the mom.
Yeah.
I guess there's a doctor, but
he comes in and the doctor is like, are my dad.
Oh, really?
It's just like different angles of his face.
That's awesome. So there's three people in the film.
Yeah, he's mad at me. He's like, why don't you show my face? I'm like, because I need you to play all the characters.
There you go. Yeah. Well, anyways, so I guess that's really interesting too then. It's your dad, because this is about, you know, that the restrictive family structure of Mexican families and everything.
Yeah.
And so or Latin American families, not only Mexicans. So I'm curious, you know, collaborating with the limited folks and communicating your vision, like how that process was, especially like confronting these themes with your own family through the process. Like, how was that?
I didn't tell my parents what it was about. Like, my parents are still together and they're like really awesome, progressive parents.
Yeah.
Obviously, sometimes they say problematic things and I'm like, my sister and I are like, bah, bah, and they're like, we're learning. But I found it difficult for me to talk to my parents. I guess it's so funny. I'm like, you guys need to be okay with sex, but I still don't feel comfortable talking about sex with my parents.
So
it's like a thing that I'm fighting for that I'm still trying to like actually, you know, not be a hypocrite. Just yelling at them and not taking anything in. But whatever, I'm growing.
We're all growing.
Yeah. But with my actors, it was really fun, especially because it's just such a common theme. Honestly, like with Catholicism in general, it doesn't matter like what ethnicity you are.
Yeah.
There's just this like shame. And I think everyone finds it really funny how that kind of, it really does affect you, like your developmental years. So the actress that played my mom really identify with it, and she thought it was funny, and she's Puerto Rican, and my mom was actually coaching her on like a Mexican accent, but I just thought she was so funny in the audition. She was like when she auditioned for it, she scared me, and I was like, oh, I gotta get her.
Yeah,
like I feel like I'm talking to my mom.
There you go.
Which was kind of a hurdle for me too when I was directing her, because I was like, oh, you know, she's a woman, and like I feel like a girl still.
Yeah.
Just because the natural dynamic when she's playing my mom, and then I'm like, I have to go behind him and then be a director. It was more of a struggle. Like, it was just about finding the confidence to, you know, step back and be like, oh, well, this is, you know, something that I feel strong about, and I don't want to be taken away just because I always seem to go back to my role of being the scared daughter.
Yeah.
But to go back to your question, like, I keep going away from.
No, it's good context. Yeah, that's great.
It was really, it was a very intimate set. It was just me, my DP, and I went to NYU, but I had producers in LA. I went to community college first, and my best friend in community college went to USC Film School, and then I went to NYU Film School.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we shot it back home. I'm from LA, and we shot it back home in my childhood home and my high school. So she was able to produce it from LA remotely. And then my producer in New York was doing like all the logistics with like insurance and whatnot.
Cool.
So it was literally just like maybe five crew members.
Yeah.
and my cast. So we were just like hanging out. Yeah. And we shot it over the weekend and we were all staying in my tiny little house.
Yeah.
So it was like there was no room to be like, you know, tiptoeing around something.
Yeah.
We were all just in front of each other all the time. So we just it was like very open.
Yeah.
It was also the weekend that Trump got elected. This was in 2016.
Oh, gosh.
And like it was I remember like I was like, I don't want to watch the rest of this. I'm going to take a nap. And then my DP woke me up and I was like, I saw his face and I was like, is Trump president?
Oh no.
And he was like, yeah. And like my family and I just started crying.
Oh gosh.
It was just like, I just felt like it was like, I don't even know. It just made me that much more focused on getting this done.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like you can teach universality with specificity.
Yeah.
And like, if I don't know, it's just, you need like a motivation, and like we just weren't allowed. I just didn't allow anyone to say his name on set because it was
great.
Like, and so we were all just living in this fantasy world of the little story.
Yeah.
And that's all we were talking about, and we kind of just closed ourselves off from like all the media.
So it's almost like that set became like well, you're trying to, you know, you're focusing on something very specific from the real world and how we can move beyond that.
Yeah.
It still was a safe space from some other part of the real world.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really interesting because it really helps you put everything in context, or not in context, but you find what is it, you think about what's actually important.
And yeah, like you look around the room and like even in film school, like I was the first in my family to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And then going to like Tisch, it's mostly like white, which is like really surprising to me, but also at the same time, oh, I guess not, because no one really taught me growing up that you necessarily, in my school, it wasn't like an option, like, oh, you can study film.
Yeah.
Like that's like kind of a weird fantasy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone like that wants to, you know, be a successful child of an immigrant, either is like a doctor or a lawyer. Like
sure.
Those are the paths.
Yeah, yeah.
So it made sense, but it was kind of like frustrating because once I got to film school, I went there, you know, I was like, I'm going to do comedy. But then you get there and you see that you're like the only like person really repping your people. And you're like, all of a sudden you feel this pressure to like become a storyteller that you didn't initially intend to be.
Totally.
And like you go through like everyone goes through like their Spike Lee phase and they're like, you know what I'm saying? And so when Trump got elected, it was really overwhelming and I felt like, oh, I don't know why I'm doing comedy. Like I should be. But then it was like, I'm getting way too lost in my place in the world and I need to just focus on like, even if it's like a dumb little story, it's important to me and maybe it's important to somebody else.
Totally.
And like that can even just, I don't know, some way distract you, but also make you recognize that you're not alone. And that kind of just became my thing where I was like so caught up in being a voice for my people and then being like, I am a voice and I happen to be of this people. And I'm fine
like,
with.
You can still do what you want to
do.
Yeah,
it like became
and
me.
And service that
exactly.
too. Yeah.
It became me justifying like why I should do comedy and then, oh, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should be this storyteller. And I was like, it led to like really dramatic documentaries, like my first year of film school. And then I was like, I don't even know who this is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not me. Like, there are great people doing that and that's what they always wanted to do, but that's not me. And I'm not like going to try to fake it. Like, I'm just going to be me.
Yeah, yeah. So what is some advice? I've had conversations with people as well. So I'm 50% Mexican. My dad's side of the family is from Mexico. Most of them live in Arizona. And and I am fair at my darkest in the summer.
Yeah.
I maybe look like that could be. And so I've had conversations with people who, you know, struggle with representing themselves and that kind of same thing of feeling an obligation to uphold your heritage and do so through their art or through what or however they want to express themselves and that heritage. And so I'm curious what your advice would be to someone that is going through that same struggle. Like if you could talk to you know, Giselle before she went to school and confronted this, what would you say that might make that easier or make it more clear how to trust yourself?
I always tell myself because I still struggle with this and I'm just like, just be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like, cause I grew up in Los Angeles, and like I was like, I just want to go to a white high school. I want to have the 90210 experience. Like, I grew up around Mexicans and Filipinos, and I was like, great, okay, I did it. And then I like went, and then I was like, I refused to speak Spanish. I was like, no, like, I don't understand it, whatever. Obviously, I did, especially when my parents were yelling at me, and I was like, I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, always trying to be as white as possible. And then when I went to high school in Burbank, I was like, finally. And then I was like, what the heck is Armenian? I was like, and then it was just like so funny, like how ridiculous I was like aspiring. Meanwhile, I was around all this like beautiful culture, and now I appreciate so much like growing up with like all these different cultures and like languages.
Yeah.
And I was like still trying to be, you know, what I saw on TV.
Yeah.
Especially because all I was doing on TV was it with an accent.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went to college and I was finally with, you know, the like majestic white people. I kind of miss, you know, eating like Armenian food or like going to get tacos and like, and then it became like a thing where whenever they talk about like a POC experience, whatever, they look at me and I'm like, I'm from the Valley. Like, I don't know what you want me to. So it was, I became happiest and honestly, I feel like my most confident when I was just like, just relax. Like, if I was, like, telling myself, like, stop trying to aspire to be something. Like, just everything that I've gone through has made, the thing that gets me the most laughs when I'm doing comedy or, like, a short film or, like, screening anything is when I tell an extremely personal story.
Yeah.
Because that's all I know how to tell. Like, that's, the second you try to be somebody else, everyone can smell it. It's fake and you're trying to do something. And it's, like, stop forcing it and just be it.
Yeah.
That's
find
so
it
corny.
Find your own way. Like,
yeah.
I think that it's easy to get lost in the what, how should I do it?
Yeah.
Rather than just do it.
And like, you know, I even like stop othering yourself too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're the only person there, just be like, well, dope. Now I can like teach people how freaking dope my culture is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if like you're with your culture, great, everyone understands
what
you've gone through, whatever. And you can all talk about like how hot Jesus was and like why did they make him that hot? Why is he white? That doesn't make sense. And like, I don't know. It's just, it's so ridiculous. And obviously I'm still very much so, you know, finding myself and just being comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long speech for young
Giselle.
It's a
good speech. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There might be a young Giselle out there, you know?
Yeah.
And so all that being said, what are you working on now? Like, what can you tell us about that's next for you and what can we look forward to maybe?
Yeah. I have been mostly doing music videos, which I didn't know I would end up. I don't know. That's been the thing that my freelancing gigs have been. I've been doing music videos.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another thing that I like, it was like, all my friends are really talented and like, they do experimental film and they just come up with like the craziest things and express it beautifully with music. And I was like, well, that's never gonna be me. Mm-hmm. So I always still do comedy when I'm doing a music video.
Sure.
And I kind of been leaning towards that. And like a lot of, so people now have been like, oh, I'm into that. Especially with music videos, it's so funny because you just have so much creative freedom.
Yeah.
And like with narrative, that's what I did in college. And it was like, you know, you have this thing that, and that's what it's going to be. And like, you have to plan according to that. But with music videos, you can literally do whatever you want. And like, if on set doesn't work out, whatever, like it's so free. And it's been, helping me a lot more actually with my storyboarding process.
Yeah.
It's way more lax and like, you can just be as weird as you want to be, and if it doesn't make sense, who cares? The song is dope.
Yeah, yeah, that's great.
I'm trying to get funding for my next short film.
Mm-hmm.
That's like everyone says, a proof of concept for a feature I wrote in college.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, where can people listening follow your work? Where can we keep up to date with all that stuff coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, GiselleBonilla.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also post a lot of the sketches I write and direct on my Instagram. My handle is Locanilla, LOCANILLA.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking some time out of the festival to come and chat more and tell us more about Virgin Sita. We love it. And thank you for submitting it. And just thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for listening. For more information on Nifty 2019, the talented youth, and more emerging filmmakers, check out nifty.org or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at NFFTY or on Instagram at Nifty Film. And for more podcasts from Party Fish Media, search Party Fish Media wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can follow us on social media at Party Fish Media. Party Fish Media.